This is Bob Decker, volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona, with this week's Listener Beware. Today I'll be reading a few articles from different sources on how to watch out for typical scams. The sources for the articles include the U.S. Postal Service, the Harvard Gazette, the FTC, and the IRS. You can find a lot of information on these official websites. As with scams, it's also important to know the source of the information or advice that you might find. In the stories I'll present this week, we'll see just how to do that. It is also very important to know what to do if you find yourself unwittingly being involved in a scam and who to contact. With those thoughts in mind, let's move on to our first article. This story originally appeared in the Harvard Gazette of September 2024 and was written by Liz Minio. You'd never fall for an online scheme, right? Wrong, says a cybersecurity expert. Online schemes are on the rise. Last year, American consumers lost $12.5 billion due to cybercrime, which represents a 22% increase over the previous year, according to the report by the FBI. Cybercriminals post fake ads on social media platforms, send emails with phishing links or malware, and recently solicit payments for unpaid tolls via text message. The Gazette asked cybersecurity expert Bruce Schneier what the government, tech companies, and consumers can do to prevent online scams. This interview has been edited for length and clarity. Many people think only older adults can be conned. Is there anyone who is really free from falling from a scam? Scams affect people regardless of age, income levels, education, and IQ. In some ways, people who are smarter become victims precisely because they think it can't happen to them. They say, "I'm too smart, I'd never fall for that." And they do because maybe it catches them on a bad day. How has the scammer's modus operandi changed with the rise in technology? It's not different from the way it used to work in the past, where a con artist would bump into you on the street and start talking to you. The difference is that the online people can do it at millions of times. The speed and scale are just what has changed, but if you read about the big scams of the 1920s, they were just as profitable. According to the FBI, consumers lost $12.5 billion to cybercrime fraud last year. It's hard to know if the numbers are accurate. A lot of people don't report it because it's embarrassing to be the victim of fraud. You feel terrible because you were tricked, you were fooled, and you're out a lot of money. Will AI make online scams harder to detect? We're starting to see AI-generated phishing emails, AI-generated fake videos, and AI-generated fake phone calls. And there are more targeted scams, where scammers target the CFO of a company, pretending to be the CEO. If you ask me how to prevent it, the answer is, I don't know. Cryptocurrency seems to be the most common payment method for scams. Online scams have been made easier by cryptocurrency, which allows instantaneous transfer of wealth in a way that can't be taken back. Scammers often ask their victims for a Bitcoin payment. You could track the rise of both ransomware and online scams to cryptocurrency. The banking system is better equipped to block suspicious transactions. If you try to wire money to Russia, the bank is going to call you and say, "What are you doing?" But if you send money to a scammer in Russia via cryptocurrency, nobody notices. More regulation would be valuable, just to make it harder for a regular person to buy and sell cryptocurrency. Should a request for a Bitcoin payment be a red flag? Yes, but by the time the person who's fallen for the scam hears that a Bitcoin transaction must take place, they'd already bought the scam, which is normally a red flag, isn't a red flag. The whole point of a scam is emotional trickery. A scam works because it works with emotions, and that's why it's hard to regulate or prevent it. What's the responsibility of social media companies to screen fake ads that lead to scams? It would be great if Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram would screen fake advertisements. They don't do a good job because fake ads generate the same revenue as real ads. Why should they screen it? It's profitable. When we talk about the responsibility of social media companies, we must understand that the customers of Facebook are its advertisers. Us, the people using Facebook, are the product. Does Facebook have any responsibility to their customers? They certainly do. We hope they do. But there's little economic incentive. Surveillance is the business model of the internet. Facebook and Google make money spying on you. They use your personal information to manipulate you, and they sell the right to manipulate you to ad companies. What a crappy business model that is. We could declare the business model illegal, but that is very unlikely because it would involve a rethinking of how tech companies make money. But there are lots of alternatives. You can imagine requiring companies to be a subscription-based or requiring advertising that is not personalized. Today, when you see an ad, it's a targeted ad that is sent to you based on the information tech companies have on you by tracking your searches and your posts. Should the government regulate social media companies and ask them to screen for fraud? I don't know of any regulation that will reduce online scams, because if someone sends you a text message and you start chatting with them, and they tell you about an investment opportunity, and you start giving them money, what new regulation can prevent that? It's already illegal. Yet I would like to see more screening on the part of the companies. I think comprehensive privacy regulation in the United States is important, but several bills have gone nowhere. Europe has the General Data Protection Regulation, which includes privacy protections and penalties for companies that don't comply. It's good, but it's still not great. Already there are several states in the country that have a GDPR-like legislation, and every year more states are following the trend. Some suggestions. 1. Don't click on unexpected emails or answer texts with links, which could lead to scams. 2. Beware of romance, job, and investment opportunities that sound too good to be true. 3. To spot and avoid scams, visit fbi.gov/scams or ftc.gov/scams. I don't have any special advice to avoid falling for an online scam, but the one you've gotten all your life. If it seems too good to be true, it is. Coming up with tips is hard because when you're in a vulnerable moment, you're not going to remember them or even listen to them. Scams target human psychology, and like offline scams throughout history, they try to convince you of something that isn't true and get you to give money for something that isn't what you think it is. There's nothing new there. What is new is the scale that they're making it easier through cryptocurrency. But like offline scams, online scams can involve romance, investing, charity, and all sorts of things where human emotions can get the best of you, where suddenly you're not thinking, you're emoting, and you do something that turns out to be, in retrospect, stupid. You must have a good bullshit detector, but even if you do, you're going to make mistakes. I think I have a good bullshit detector, but I also think that I've been lucky. I'm not going to say I would never fall for it, because next week something might happen. Our second story comes from the U.S. Postal Service and discusses brushing, a scam where unsolicited packages show up on your doorstep, and what to do about them. What could be better than opening the mailbox on the front door and finding an unexpected package? We all love surprises and gifts, but when these seemingly harmless free items come from a company or retailer, they may come with a higher cost than you realize. Oftentimes, this kind of unsolicited merchandise is part of a larger brushing scam, which is illegal in the United States and many other countries. This is how it works. The person receives packages or parcels containing various sorts of items which were not ordered by the recipient. While the package may be addressed to the recipient, there's not a return address, or the return address could be that of a retailer. The sender of the item is usually an international third-party seller who has found the recipient's address online. The intention is to give the impression that the recipient is a verified buyer who has written positive online reviews of the merchandise, meaning they write a fake review in your name. These fake reviews help fraudulently boost or inflate the product's ratings and sale numbers, which they hope results in an increase of actual sales in the long run. Since the merchandise is usually cheap and low cost to ship, the scammers perceive this as a profitable payoff. A new variation of the brushing scam has emerged, adding a component of quishing. Quishing, short for QR code phishing, uses a QR code that sends you to a fake website once you scan it. These websites look legitimate and seemingly are from and appear to be official sites of banks, government organizations, or other institutions. But they actually are scams or fake sites used by criminals to get your personal identifiable information, or PII. Cards with QR codes are being sent inside of packages as part of a brushing scams. The QR code is sent under the guise that you'll need to scan the code to find out who sent you the gift, or to get more information on the company that sent the gift. This is why it's bad. While it may appear to be a victimless crime, you did, after all, get some free stuff, the reality is that your personal information may be compromised. Often scammers obtain personal information through nefarious means with ill intentions and use it for a number of scams and other illicit activities in the future. Your fake review may prompt people to purchase worthless stuff. In other instances, bad actors are using a person's address and account information to receive merchandise and then steal it from the home before the resident is able to intercept it. This is what to do. Follow tips to keep your personal information safe and be aware of what to do in the event you receive unsolicited merchandise. Have you received a package in the mail but didn't order anything? Few things to do. Don't pay for the merchandise. Do not be swindled or talked into paying for it. Return to sender. If marked with a return address and it is unopened, you may mark it return to sender and USPS will return it at no charge to you. Throw it away. If you opened it and do not wish to keep it, you may simply dispose of it in the garbage as long as it's safe to do so. Keep it. If you opened it and you like it, you may keep it. By law, you may keep unsolicited merchandise and are under no obligation to pay for it. Change your account passwords. Your personal information may have been compromised. Closely monitor. Closely monitor your credit reports and credit card bills. Notify authorities. If the merchandise is organic, i.e. seeds, food, plants, or an unknown liquid or substance, notify the proper authorities and follow their instructions. Suspicious contents. If you're wary of the contents inside an unsolicited package, please follow the instructions on our suspicious mail page. Notify the retailer. If unsolicited merchandise appears from Amazon, eBay, or another third-party seller, go to that company's website and file a fraud report. Ask the company to remove any fake reviews under your name. Our next article comes from the Internal Revenue Service website, and it talks about tax scams that IRS impersonators use. The story includes recommendations on how to be sure you're actually dealing with the IRS. You can avoid falling for a tax scam. Know what to watch out for and how the IRS contacts you. Tax scam warning signs. Scammers mislead you about tax refunds, credits, and payments. They pressure you for personal, financial, or employment information or money. IRS impersonators try to look like us. Watch out for a big payday. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. Bad tax advice on social media may convince you to lie on forms or mislead you about credits you can claim. Demands or threats. Impersonators want you to pay now or else. They threaten arrest or deportation. They don't let you question or appeal the amount of tax you owe. Website links. Odd or misspelled web links can take you to harmful sites instead of the IRS.gov. How to know it's the IRS? You can protect yourself from impersonators by knowing how we contact you. Ways it will contact you. We typically contact you the first time through regular U.S. mail delivered by the U.S. Postal Service. To verify the IRS sent a letter or notice, you can search for it on IRS.gov. Some letters are sent from private collection agencies. Other ways we contact you. Email. We email you only with your permission, with a few exceptions, like criminal investigations. Text message. We text you only with your permission. Phone. We might call to discuss your case, verify information, or set up a meeting. Fax. We might send a fax to verify or request employment information. In-person visit. These are rare. We generally send a letter before we visit. We don't contact you or take payment on social media. Get trusted tax information on our official social media accounts. We don't accept gift cards or prepaid debit cards as payment. We don't threaten to call law enforcement or immigration officials. We don't take your citizenship status, driver's license, or business license. We don't leave pre-recorded voicemails, robocalls. And we don't mail tax debit resolution advertisements. If we visit you, unannounced visits are rare. Only four types of employees may visit your home or business. Each contacts you in specific ways and carries official identification. First category is revenue agents, examinations, or audits. Revenue agents are civilian employees who conduct examinations or audits. They review financial records to verify what you reported. They may meet you at an IRS office or visit your home, business, or accountant's office. A visit may require a tour of your business or your authorized power of attorney. Before a visit, the agent contacts you by mail. After, they may call you to discuss your audit. Third-party contacts. If the agent needs information from someone else, a third party, they mail them a letter. The agent may then call them. Sometimes the IRS issues a summons by mail or in person. Second category is revenue officers, or collections. Revenue officers are civilian employees. They help resolve returns and taxes owed as part of the collection process. They tell you about your rights, obligations, options, and consequences. Before a visit, the officer mails letter 725B or calls you to set up a visit. To confirm your appointment, call the phone number on your letter. They mail several notices and letters. They visit if multiple attempts to contact you are unanswered. During a visit, if you owe tax, you can pay the officer in cash or check, certified funds, or money order payable to United States Treasury. You can also pay online. Businesses. When you fall behind on employment tax, we send you a federal tax deposit, FTD, alert. The officer calls before mailing a balance due notice, mails letter 5857, FTD alert telephone contact, with a call time. To confirm or reschedule, call the phone number on your letter, or sets up follow-ups if needed. Special agents for criminal investigations. Criminal investigation special agents are federal law enforcement agents in the IRS Criminal Investigation Unit, IRSCI. They are authorized to investigate tax and related crimes, like money laundering. They are the only armed IRS employees. They may visit or call unannounced as part of an investigation. Call others connected to an investigation. Email you from a third-party platform. They don't ask for personally identifiable information, PII, work on civil tax cases, or demand payment. Fuel inspectors. This is only for pervasively regulated industry sites, including refineries, terminals, wholesalers, retailers, and end users, where taxable fuel is produced or stored. IRS fuel inspectors visit unannounced for an interview and tour, gather your information, inform you on how to become and remain compliant with fuel tax laws. Identification we carry. Revenue officers, revenue agents, and fuel inspectors carry an IRS-issued credential, pocket commission, and HSPD 12 card. Both have the employee's serial number and photo. You can ask to see both. You may also ask to see additional ID from revenue agents and fuel inspectors. Fuel inspectors also wear uniforms and drive government vehicles. Criminal investigation special agents present law enforcement credentials when they investigate. If you feel unsafe, call 911. If the person doesn't show you these IDs or you aren't sure about them, call the number on the card provided by the revenue officer or agent. The Dirty Dozen represents the worst of the tax scams. Compiled annually, the Dirty Dozen lists a variety of common scams that taxpayers may encounter anytime, but many of these schemes peak during filing season when people prepare their returns or hire someone to help with their taxes. Our last article is from the Federal Trade Commission. Scams that use supposed family emergencies continue to occur and often victimize older citizens. Information on how to help to spot one of these scams if you get a phone call, text, or email is included. From the Federal Trade Commission, this article is entitled, How to Avoid a Scam. Recognizing the common signs of a scam could help you to avoid them. The FTC will never threaten you, say you must transfer your money to protect it, or tell you to withdraw cash or buy gold to give it to someone. That's a scam. We report it at reportfraud.ftc.gov. Four signs that it's a scam. Number one, scammers pretend to be from an organization you know. Scammers often pretend to be contacting you on behalf of the government. They might use a real name like the FTC, Social Security Administration, IRS, or Medicare, or make up a name that sounds official. Some pretend to be from a business you know, like a utility company, a tech company, or even a charity asking for donations. They use technology to change the phone number that appears on your caller ID, so the number of the name that you see might not be real. 2. Scammers say that there's a problem, or a prize. They might say to you you're in trouble with the government, or you owe money, or someone in your family had an emergency, or that there's a virus on your computer. Some scammers say there's a problem with one of your accounts and you need to verify some information. Others will lie and say you won money in a lottery or sweepstakes, but have to pay a fee to get it. 3. Scammers pressure you to act immediately. Scammers want you to act before you have time to think. If you're on the phone, they might tell you not to hang up, so you can't check out their story. They might threaten to arrest you, sue you, take away your driver's or business license, or deport you. They might say your computer is about to be corrupted. 4. Scammers to tell you to pay in a specific way. They often insist that you can only pay by using cryptocurrency, wiring money through a company like MoneyGram or Western Union, using a payment app, or putting money on a gift card and then giving them the numbers on the back of the card. Some will send you a check that will later turn out to be fake, then tell you to deposit and send them the money. How to avoid a scam? Block unwanted calls and text messages. Take steps to block unwanted calls and to filter unwanted text messages. Don't give your personal or financial information in response to a request that you didn't expect. Honest organizations won't call, email, or text and ask you for personal information like your Social Security, bank account, or credit card numbers. If you get an email or a text message from a company you do business with and you think it's real, it's still best not to click on any links. Instead, contact them using a website you know is trustworthy, or look up their phone number. Don't call a number they give you or the number from your caller ID. Resist the pressure to act immediately. Honest businesses will give you time to make a decision. Anyone who pressures you to pay or give them your personal information is a scammer. Know how scammers tell you to pay. Never pay someone who insists that you can only pay with cryptocurrency, a wire transfer service like Western Union or MoneyGram, a payment app, or a gift card. And never deposit a check and send money back to someone. Stop and talk to someone you trust. Before you do anything else, tell someone, a friend, a family member, a neighbor, what happened. Talking about it could help you to realize it's a scam. If you were scammed, report the scam to the FTC. You can do that at reportfraud.ftc.gov. What to do if you were scammed? If you paid a scammer, here are a few questions and suggestions. Did you pay with a credit card or a debit card? If so, contact the company or bank that issued the credit card or debit card. Tell them it was a fraudulent charge. Ask them to reverse the transaction and give you your money back. Did the scammer make an unauthorized transfer from your bank account? Then contact your bank and tell them it was an unauthorized debit or withdrawal. Ask them to reverse the transaction and give you your money back. Did you pay with a gift card? Contact the company that issued the gift card. Tell them it was used in a scam and ask them to refund your money. Keep the gift card itself and the gift card receipt. Did you send a wire transfer through a company like Western Union or MoneyGram? Contact the wire company. Tell them it was a fraudulent transfer. Ask them to reverse the wire transfer and give you your money back. Did you send a wire transfer through your bank? Contact your bank and report the fraudulent transfer. Ask them to reverse the wire transfer and give you your money back. Did you send money through a money transfer app? Report the fraudulent transaction to the company behind the money transfer app and ask them to reverse the payment. If you link the app to a credit card or debit card, report the fraud to your credit card company or bank. Ask them to reverse the charge. Did you pay with cryptocurrency? Cryptocurrency payments typically are not reversible. Once you pay with cryptocurrency, you can only get your money back if the person you paid sends it back. But contact the company you used to send the money and tell them it was a fraudulent transaction. Ask them to reverse the transaction if possible. Did you send cash? If you sent cash by U.S. mail, contact the U.S. Postal Inspection Service at 877-876-2455 and ask them to intercept the package. To learn more about this process, visit the USPS Package Intercept. If you used another delivery service, contact them as soon as possible. If you gave a scammer your personal information, here are a few questions. Did you give the scammer your Social Security number? If so, go to identitytheft.gov to see what steps to take, including how to monitor your credit. Did you give a scammer your username and password? Create a new strong password. If you use the same password anywhere else, change it there too. If a scammer has access to your computer or phone, here are a few questions. Does a scammer have remote access to your computer? Update your security software in your computer. Run a scan, delete anything that identifies as a problem, then take other steps to protect your personal information. Did a scammer take control of your cell phone number and account? If so, contact your service provider and take back control of your phone number. Once you do, change your account password. Also, check your credit card, bank, and other financial accounts for unauthorized charges or changes. If you see any, report them to the company or institution. Then go to identitytheft.gov to see what steps you should take. This has been Bob Decker, volunteer reader at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thanks for listening.